Well, we're back for our final lecture. I'm sitting in the car at the Lenore Aquatic Center, and my son's swimming, and it's a good time to talk to you. I want to talk about this last lecture. Approximately between 11 and 13 million people during the period before and into World War II will be killed as a result of the Holocaust. About half of those were Jewish peoples. And remember that Hitler hated the Slavic people. In 1925, he publishes one of his two books that he wrote, Mein Kampf, about his hatred for the Jewish people. But also remember that Hitler and the National Socialists, the Nazis, as Churchill called them, wanted a supreme race. And they couldn't have a supreme race with supposed Undermen, or less than people, as the National Socialists viewed Jewish people, or retarded people, as the word was at that time, people with physical disabilities, or gay people, or children with a birth defect, or political prisoners, or religious people who stood against National Socialism, like a gentleman by the name of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who, writes, just keeps writing in a Nazi prison, and who Hitler will make sure that he executes before the end of World War II. It's important to remember those people. It's important to remember the loss. It's important to remember the tragedy, the toughness that some of these people lived through. And I want to tell you a story about a very famous lady. Her name is Corrie Ten Boom. And I love this story because it speaks to people's tenacity and their faith. Corrie Ten Boom tells a story in her book. She had an older sister. And her family hid people during the war, but they were captured and they are sent to a concentration camp. And her older sister came to her one day and said, "You need to pray for the fleas in our barracks." And the place where these girls stayed with other prisoners, other female prisoners, it was god-awful. It was flea-infested. It was dirty. And on a lot of days they would have to get up and walk through the snow to work. And Corrie Ten Boom kind of asked herself a question, why do I need to pray for the fleas? I'm not going to pray for fleas, but she decided eventually to go ahead and pray for the fleas. It turned out at the end of the war that the barracks was so flea infested that the German guards would not go in there very much to pick people out for extermination. Think about how your life changes on a decision like that. There was another gentleman by the name of Viktor Frankl who was also in the Holocaust. And at the end of the war, he writes Man's Search for Meaning about, how you survive some of life's toughest challenges. And it's a great read if you get a chance to read it. Of course, all of you are probably familiar with Elie Wiesel and his Night Trilogy. Such a wonderful set of readings. And I just want to say, I think it's important to remember those people and the things that they went through. To remember that Holocaust-type situations still happen today. I think a lot of times people study the Holocaust during World War II, and they just forget that stuff like that happens today, whether it's the killing of religious peoples in Bosnia, or the murder of a Kurdish minority in Iraq in 1986. These things still happen. At home during World War II, bacon grease was saved. You saved your bacon grease and put it in a special collection bottle, and you sent it to the government, and the government would take your bacon grease and make dynamite out of it. Ladies, you you sometimes sent in your undergarments to the federal government because they had elastic in them, and elastic could be used for parachute netting and different things for the war. Gentlemen, you didn't have elastic in your underwear during World War II. You basically had to tie your underwear together because it came with straps. Again, conserving for the war effort. I think about my grandmother on my mom's side during World War II because she had two daughters, ages 5 and 3. And they moved in with her mother and her sisters as their husbands were drafted and went to war. And I think about how tough it must have been to raise two daughters by herself. But she had her family, and I recently spoke to my aunt, who is in her 80s now, and she remembered that time of living with her aunts and her grandparents during the war, and how even though they were young kids, they knew something big was going on. You know, everything was conserved during the war. Sugar, gas. You know, this is when the national speed limit will begin. It was 35 miles an hour. Every family got a ration book, and it came with stamps. And you could only use that limited supply of stamps for things like sugar, and meat, and gas, and different things like that. My other grandmother on my dad's side was a student at Appalachian Teachers College, ASU, today. And where do you want to go on spring break? You want to go to the beach. And so she and her buddies saved up all their gas stamps in the hopes of going to the beach. But they ran out of stamps, and of course they had to get their boyfriends to come get them. The dropping of the bomb is going to issue in a new era in American history. It's going to issue in the atomic age. And that's going to have huge ramifications for our time, when today the United States and several other countries are paying Iran not to develop a nuclear bomb. I mean, you know, that's real serious stuff. Again, Franklin Roosevelt dies. He had been elected to 4 terms. He wasn't able to complete his 4th term. But this was a major deal. So many stories. 70 million people worldwide killed in this event. By the end of the war, the United States cannot return to isolationism. There'll be no such thing as isolationism anymore. And the United States will be called upon to lead the democratic part of the world. By World War II conferences such as Yalta and Potsdam, there'll be a big division, a schism between the United States and the Soviet Union, Russia. And that's going to begin an emerging Cold War that will last from 1945 to 1991. And that'll have profound ramifications on American technology, American education. And that's going to be a story for almost the rest of our course. I want to tell you 2 personal stories from World War II, or about World War II, relating to World War II, that affected a little boy. And that little boy was growing up in eastern Tennessee at the time, but he had a chance to spend time with his grandparents every summer for a couple weeks, both sides. I remember going into my mom's dad's closet. He had been a member of the 82nd Airborne. He had fought in the Battle of the Bulge. He was in Germany, in Berlin to be exact, at the time the atomic bombs were dropped. And I remember going into his closet, and he was a businessman when I was growing up, And so his suits would be immaculately hung up, his coats and his ties and his hats and his umbrellas and his gloves would be perfectly placed in his closet. I remember being awed by that. But then over in the midst of all that was an olive drab green uniform with stripes on the side. And it doesn't take a very smart little boy to realize that something's different amidst all these suits and hats and gloves and umbrellas. I want to come back to that. A couple years after that, I was with my other grandfather in Morganton, my dad's dad, and he wanted to take me to a fireworks show. So we go to the fireworks show just near Western Piedmont Community College. It's 6 o'clock in the evening on a hot summer night, July 4th week, and the first fireworks that go off are the ones that scream down. I've never seen a man 6'2 get under a lawn chair so fast. And it was my first experience with post-traumatic stress disorder. My grandfather loved me enough to take me back home to his house, and he explained to me what happened. He told me some stories about World War II that I'll probably share with you in class. It was a defining moment. I've never forgotten that moment with my grandfather at the fireworks show. I've never forgotten that moment being in my grandfather's closet and seeing his uniform and his weapon from World War II for the first time. And today I have that uniform in my own closet as a reminder of legacy. And on the good days, but especially on some tough days, I'll open my closet door and I'll look at that uniform with the stripes on it, and I'll remind myself that there have been tough days before and that there'll be tough days again. But we as a people and as a country can handle those things. Thank you.